Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Roberto Montaño, Mike Miller, Michael Lotus, and Mark Witte. Our program tonight, Comedy Tomorrow Base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And if you want to join us on the World Wide Web, audio and video each and every week, beyondthebeltway.com. That's also where you can go if you miss the show any week. That's exactly where it is. It stays there for a long, long time. Well, last night, President Trump had a huge rally in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Several thousand very strong supporters of his showed up to give him a rousing welcome to the Keystone State. And a little over 100 miles away in Washington, D.C., the White House correspondents were meeting, talking to themselves, trying to raise money for a worthy cause. But again, they didn't have the star appeal of the president, and a lot of Hollywood stars chose not to show up as well. So again, in that first, there's been so much said and written about the first 100 days. This is probably, we're going to end this discussion. We're not going to talk about the 100 days anymore, okay? We're done with it. We'll talk about how many days he has left as President of the United States. But I do want to begin to just on the issue of one thing that has been said in some of the analysis thus far. In fact, Rich Lowry from the National Review said on one of the shows today that if people came back from Mars and they looked at what was happening in America, they would think there was sort of a traditional Republican president, that they didn't see any of the hard-nosed, you know, populism that sort of propelled them to the White House. Michael Lotus, you're our card-carrying Trumpster. You were a Trumpster long before it was fashionable. If it is, it's not really fashionable in Chicago, but
nor will it ever be.
So pull your microphone up a little bit closer, okay, to me, if you will. And where do you come down? I mean, is he the populist you thought that he would be?
I think he's the populist who found out he can't be a populist if he can't get the Republican Congress that has no particular love for him to work with him, and that that's going to be a more difficult and slow process than he probably hoped or believed it would be.
When some critics, including the media, are suggesting that maybe he's moderating some of his positions, Roberto, you are our Democrat, Roberto Montaño, does that help the Democratic cause to paint him as a boogeyman when people are acknowledging, even people that aren't big fans of his, acknowledging that maybe he's a little more reasonable than thought?
Reasonable is one way to say it. We would say that as a Democrat that he lacks his principles. There was a contract with America that he put out. He signed it. Not a single one of those points has come across. Now, he realizes he's evolving and he's growing into the role, and God bless him for being a little flexible. But if you want to say you're going to do something, you put it in writing, we would expect one or two of those to be done, and not one is.
Would you acknowledge that his public utterances and his attempts at immigration reform, although they have been rebuffed by federal courts, at least the reporting on this issue is that the number of people trying to get to the United States is down dramatically since he was elected president of the United States. So his big mouth, if you will, is causing some people to think twice about coming into this country illegally.
I believe in markets. I believe that people go where they're treated well, and a lot of people have not been welcomed here. And a lot of what he's doing is going to be very expensive. I know that not a single member of Congress, Republican or Democrat, along the border has supported the wall. They just doesn't make sense for them. There are people like Beto O'Rourke in El Paso, Texas, running against Ted Cruz. That is a core centerpiece, and he's moving the agenda. So people seem to be responding to more of free markets and let goods and services move, including immigrants.
Mike Miller, you are an economist from DePaul University, frequent guest on the show for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. You are not a Trump supporter.
Correct.
But after 101 days, is he more moderate than you expected him to be?
He's about exactly what I expected, because he's a very pragmatic man. He's a systems thinker. He's very persuasive. He still does not have any filter between his brain and his mouth. He still runs at the mouth and says stupid things. But I think of several things which are very important. One is Neil Gorsuch. That's to those of us who did not want Hillary Clinton, this is the greatest thing we could have possibly gotten. The other one is there's a well-known economist named Larry Summers, and he says the number one stimulus for an economy is confidence, When we talk in macro, we talk about planned spending versus actual, and that planned is more important and so forth. I think he has the potential to create confidence that Hillary Clinton could have never created.
Mark Witte joins us, also an economist from Northwestern University. Would you agree with Mike's comment about confidence and whether or not, at least to the markets and to the economists of the country, is there an element of confidence that people will see in Donald Trump?
I'd probably go the other way. I think that in a internationalized, global supply chain world, he's creating a lot of uncertainty about, what our costs are going to be, where we should sign contracts, where we should plan trade routes.
Those doubts, are those good doubts or are those just bad doubts?
Those are bad doubts.
Does everybody agree that they're bad doubts?
Yeah, that would be. Anytime you break chains of supply chains and so forth, that's a problem. But there's a couple of things we have to understand. One is confidence. The second one is if you can create some kind of permanence, as opposed to everything that you do is transitory, that a policy that you pass today will be changed a year from now. I think that there's the chance he could create some permanence. I think that would make a difference. There's almost nothing you can do in the tax code in the way they're tinkering with it, moving it from 39 to 36 or 36 to 39. It's not going to have a dramatic effect upon revenues, and it's not going to have a dramatic effect upon growth rates. But what it can do is it can reduce regulate or costs that people have to incur to live up to the law, just like he wants to do with his tax cuts. He's showing that he wants to simplify taxes, which can create confidence. He wants to make corporations more competitive, which can create confidence. And if one other thing that the confidence can create is entrepreneurship, something we have been lacking, is we don't seem to have a younger class of people willing to start new businesses compared to the past. This might be just what is necessary by lowering the tax rate on those people starting those new businesses that could create more entrepreneurship, and that would be positive.
Mike Lotus, your comment.
Yeah, I agree with that, and a few details. One of the things Trump said during the campaign that was interesting was having a 15% tax rate, not just on corporations, but on all businesses. And the idea that we're going to have a very low rate on kind of mom-and-pop businesses, startup businesses, individual-scale businesses, and motivate people to self-employ or start small businesses, that is a very important step we need to take. Because what we're seeing is the large corporations, even when they're profitable, aren't creating jobs the way they did 50 years ago or 20 years ago. That's not where the job creation is. I got to take issue with the idea that he's done nothing he said he would do. He's been pushing on deregulation. Congress has used the Congressional Review Act to pull back on some of the regulations. That takes a while to percolate through the economy to see any benefit from it. But he's been consistent thematically with what he said he wanted to do.
How have in the 100 days so far, how have the Democrats performed, Roberto? I mean, are they just the party of no, or have they been able to articulate some positions that would bring back some of those blue-collar voters that they lost? That's the question. You're going to have a couple of minutes to think about it. 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border. What's your grade on President Trump's first 100 days as president? Back shortly from Chicago.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much. Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone.
I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Dumont back in Chicago. My question to our Democrat this evening was the first 100 days of the Democrats, have they been able to move the needle at all in bringing blue-collar voters back to support them or think of supporting them? Or are they focused too much on just being a resistance to the president?
There's so many different types of blue-collar voters, and each one of them is got its own echo chamber sometimes, because you talk just to union people, and there's a difference between the service employees and the trade unions. But what I would say is what Democrats have succeeded in doing is we are really concerned about the economy. One of our solutions is an immigrant-friendly approach. We think that nobody starts small businesses, nobody does entrepreneurship like immigrants. We think that you're going to see a significant drop of the baby boomers retiring. Talk about a slowdown in the economy. The easy solution to that, where does productivity come from? People working. And we have a way to boost our economy immediately if we just have a very simple pro-immigrant policy.
You are a political operative, right?
I am.
When a candidate says over and over and over he's going to build the wall and the crowds, you know, bounce off the walls every time they hear it, including last night in Harrisburg. How do you say that a candidate that says that over and over again is acting smartly if he backs away from a pledge that is indelibly etched in the minds of everyone that supported him? 96% of the people who would do it again today.
So that is,
to me, that's political. You're asking him to commit political suicide.
Well, I'm asking him to grow his base because he has got a strong core support, but he's not getting any friends beyond that. There's a lot of people that have buyer's remorse. Democrats in Wisconsin that were on culture voting with him in Pennsylvania, in Ohio.
But 96%.
Really? You have evidence for that? 96%.
Right to life, Catholics?
96% of his voters would vote for him again. And according to the poll last week, if the election were held again, he'd still beat Hillary Clinton.
Yep.
So my question to you is, as a political operative, you know, you're on the other side of the issue, but why would someone, why would he back away? In fact, you said before he went on here,
I can tell you why.
He's going to back away from building the wall.
Oh,
and I'm just wondering.
He doesn't have the votes. And, you know, every single member of Congress along the border is against it.
What do you think of that, if he backed away from that pledge?
He'd be a one-term president for sure, because that's the one thing he started out with. That's the first thing he talked about. And he has said, I'm going to secure the border, and that's what I'm going to do. And
what about what Roberto just said? There are some Republicans in border states or in the states that border Mexico.
All of them.
That aren't going to be supporting it. Republicans.
The Republican Party didn't want this guy to be president anyway, and the Republicans in Congress mostly don't want to do what he ran on and wants to do.
Can he use them as an excuse, though?
I think, he's probably going to push them to try to get something. If they vote him down, he's going to complain about it, give some of them primaries. I don't know what he's going to do, but he can't back away from the promise to secure the border.
I'm also convinced that the Democrats, this 100 days in, still consider me and others like me to be deplorable and irredeemable. I've seen nothing in terms of their treatment of Mr. Trump or our Republicans to come to any other conclusion. They still don't understand why they lost. They're making all kinds of excuses, and I think I guess being a conservative within universities, there's all kinds of condescension that comes my way all the time.
Sure.
And I very much resent the way that Democrats feel about it. And the thing, of course, even being a Christian, to hear that I'm irredeemable,
right.
I was just floored by that somehow that even my soul, cannot be saved. Because
so, Mark, do you agree with that?
So where exactly were you told you were irredeemable?
Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
She
talked said
about she,
half of
a
them were deplorable,
of deplorables.
Half are deplorables, and you know.
Okay. Well, they also she added that they were irredeemable. So, she used the word irredeemable.
I don't recall that.
Oh, absolutely. But,
let me just say, I'm a Democrat. I'm your brother in Christ as well. I don't feel that way about you. And there are many Latinos that are very conservative, very family oriented. We're faithful people. Family people. Traditionally, because of Reagan, there's a lot of love for the Republican Party. And if Trump were to be a little bit kinder to this burgeoning demographic,
you're probably right.
You're going to see a transformation of the Republican Party into a much bigger tent.
I see that. I live in a village, a suburban Chicago, that's 40% Hispanic. predominantly Mexican as opposed to
hardworking, conservative people, probably.
I love my neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's changed dramatically, but I love everything it's become, and I love the people. There's been no issue with that. But there is a question about if we're going to let you come in the door, please come in the front door, don't come in the back door.
Absolutely.
And
but
I think that that's the one distinction that somehow Mr. Trump
is
has
there,
to make more
is
clearly.
There a way let's come back to one of the big pieces of news this past week, and that is the unveiling of his tax plan, albeit a one-pager.
Sure.
Mark, what was your assessment of that tax plan?
Well, it was a campaign document, utterly lacking with any scorable specifics. So it was in no way a campaign, or it was in no way a tax plan. It was just something to fill the air, something to, give him something on his report card for the 100 days.
Mark?
I agree that there are no details. So the CBO could not score it the way they want. But it did send, in my mind, it did set out one, it set out his philosophy. His philosophy is simplification, 7 down to 3 tax brackets. He also lowered taxes for, he got rid of the death tax, he got rid of the alternative minimum. He wants to, he didn't get rid of them. So when you look at it, he's trying to reduce the tax rate to incent people to work harder. Now, I don't know if that is going to necessarily lead to more economic growth. The empirical research is mixed on that. Is it going to have a major effect upon revenues? It's mixed on that as well. It probably will go down. But see, I have no faith in forecasts regarding budgets. Mm-hmm. If there's any forecasts that economists make that are the most pathetic of all we make, the ones regarding budgets and what they will be, say, 2, 3, 5 years from now.
A question I would have, using the repeal and replace problem that he had when he thought and Paul Ryan thought they had the votes. Then it's turned out they haven't had the votes. And they did some fine-tuning this week, and they had the conservatives maybe jumping on board and the moderates jumping off board. So, again, they still haven't got that act together again. But when you're coming out with something as massive as a tax cut plan, why is it that not more time has been spent in talking to leaders of Congress to find out what's doable?
Well, I don't know that they haven't, but I do think your point is well taken, that the effort for him to back the health care plan, it was an elaborated bill, and it failed. I think what he's done with this tax thing, he's basically just restated his campaign themes. He said, here's my one-pager. These are the top-line items I want. You guys write the bill.
Here's my frustration, though. All right, he said it during the campaign. He's had 100 days, which is not a lot of days. Mm-hmm. So we know pretty much the philosophical position that he's taking. Why doesn't he have senior people talking with senior people in the House saying, let's get together, give me a bill that has all of these points, and let's when we announce it, when I announce this plan, let's have 15, 20 people in the House and Senate say, this is a great idea.
Well,
he hasn't done it.
I want to go back to something Mike said. This tax plan sort of laid out Trump's philosophy, and I think it did, but in a different way, that he's an improviser. He is, he's basically a reality TV star. And, what made him great on the campaign is he was, utterly unpredictable. And he's continuing that. It's like, it's amateur hour.
I disagree with this.
Well, look, hear me out, though. Like, with the health plan, there are a lot of ways he could have done that. And he had no plan at all. They just, it came at the last seconds, they threw up a shot.
No, that's not
and
true.
Nowhere. And with this tax plan, again, there are lots of strong conservative Republican plans out there. He could have picked up any one of them, and they just threw out
the health care plan was basically Price's plan, which had been circulating for years. So the idea that, Trump threw something at the wall, it's not true. It looked like the one that would be the most likely that they would be able to pass on a reconciliation basis. And that failed. That effort failed. So what he's done, and I don't think it's true that he was just making stuff up. To the contrary, he said the exact same things every time. Mm-hmm. I listened to most of those. I was working late a lot last year. I just have the rallies going in the background. Mm-hmm. He said the same things over and over again. And this one pager is the same things he's been asking for all along.
He said taxes are going to go up on the rich. He said they're going to go down. He said on the healthcare thing, everybody's going to have insurance.
He talked about that for just the one example. The 15% for all businesses was something jumped out at me when I heard it, and he must have said it a dozen times. That's one example.
But my point is, he has said it again and again and again. And yet, when he, the day after he got elected, Why has he not been working more extensively with Congress so that Congress can be writing these pieces of legislation so that when he announces them, and he's going to get lots of publicity in doing it, he's got more than one page. He's got Senate bills. He's got House bills. He's got bills that literally are ready to go with enthusiastic supporters. It seems to me that's how you move something forward.
I used to work in Capitol Hill. Legislation takes work. He hasn't put in the work. It was 17 days of work.
Should Republicans have been helping him more?
Well, he's got an unpopulated administration.
That's a huge problem.
Yeah.
But he's got thousands of jobs he hasn't filled yet.
Yes, he does. And that's part of the work, right? He didn't have his plum book all filled out. There's a lot of deep processes that have to be implemented. He doesn't even know what they are. So he hired people that he really, in my opinion, should push Bannon out a little bit more from a personal perspective and bringing somebody more senior, someone that's got some experience.
But here's my question is, and as we get back to the fact that point you made, and that is a lot of these Republicans in the House and Senate, they don't like him. They weren't for him. What I'm saying is it doesn't seem to me that in the House and the Senate with senior people and senior policy people, you don't have congressional members wanting to make the president look good by filling in some of these cracks that everyone knows are there. They don't seem to be helping him in getting the legislation ready and prepared to be voted on that really will address issues that they may agree with the president on.
It is amazing that, I mean, they're going to have midterms coming up and they can't let Trump go down and crash. That's going to kill them. So I don't know why they aren't coming forward.
What is your answer?
Barack Obama said, hard things are hard. Governing is hard. Nobody wakes up on Monday and says, I want to be president on Tuesday. It takes years. And his experience before this is just not exactly germane.
Well, that's why he was elected. Because the American people are trying to fire the entire establishment from both parties.
And
there's problems with that.
Well, what we're hearing is that the entire establishment can't be fired. I want to hear that from the audience as well. 1-800-723-8289. Do you agree with that? Has the swamp been drained at all in the first 100 days? I'm Bruce Dumont. Mother's Day is coming up on Sunday, May 14th. Do you have something special for your mom this year? How about an experience that she'll never forget, and one you and your entire family can enjoy watching for years to come? It's an opportunity for your mom to be interviewed by Larry King down at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in downtown Chicago. It's an opportunity for her to share her childhood, her life's memorable moments, the moments that frequently are shared over holiday dinners. The Larry King Fantasy Interview Experience is a recorded memory for a lifetime. Her interview with the legendary Larry King, recorded, then edited together, for all to see and share with the family around the world. The questions are simple, nothing to study for, but an opportunity for your mom to share her life with Larry King. Go to museum.tv for further details. Look for Larry King's picture. That's museum.tv. A great gift for only $24.95. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and during the break, Roberta, you made an interesting comment. You say the voters don't care about taxes and they don't care about the economy. All they care about is security. Elaborate.
Absolutely. So there was 1,000 Trump voters that were polled April 17th through the 19th, 1,000 of them. His base that we were talking about earlier, 41% ranked national security as their top concern, 14 points ahead of the economy. And more than the economy and taxes combined. His base is all about the bread and circus. They don't care about the substance. They want the sizzle. They're enjoying the show. They don't know that he won. They're still rah-rahing. But now we have Korea. Now we have China. Now we have Venezuela burning. And we have real issues. So in my perspective, it's time to set aside the show and get to work.
Well, let's switch the gears from the economy at the moment, and let's talk about China and North Korea. We spent several weeks in a row here talking about North Korea with good discussions. As a Democrat, do you applaud his policy at the moment on North Korea? And do you know what it is?
So he doesn't know where the aircraft carriers are. And in his defense,
his admiral didn't.
Yeah, so he doesn't know what he's doing yet. He's still improvising. He had a meeting with Xi. Last time we talked here, we talked about how China was going to be essential, and he is evolving, so we'll give him credit for that. Right? The president is earnestly trying to fix something that he doesn't quite understand, And thank goodness we've got Mattis. Thank goodness we have the National Security Advisors.
McMaster.
The new one, right? He needed to get away from
McMaster.
The old one.
He
McMaster.
Did.
And that's my point.
Democrats won't let him get away with that. But
if he hires better people around him,
Mark,
people
okay. What is your assessment? Again, your expertise is in the economy. We've talked that about that thus far. But as a Democrat and not a supporter of Trump, what grades would you give him just on the way in which he's dealing with North Korea and China, and we'll throw Russia into the mix as well?
Well, I'm happy he's walked back the harsh words he said about China and currency manipulation. I mean, that was kind of embarrassing. It was years out of date. With North Korea, I don't know. It is a problem that has stymied everybody. That they talk about the nukes, they talk about the missiles, but at the end of the day, they've got the artillery. Conventional weapons do tremendous damage to South Korea, Seoul, and our troops there. And so it's a conundrum that has stumped everybody. So I can't really fault him there.
Do you agree that sending the Carl Vinson into the Korean Peninsula was a wise thing to do, or do you think that it might have been provocative against a man that reacts strangely with provocation?
I'm not going to touch that one. Sorry.
I'm just thinking he also always has China on his mind because China is our only link to North Korea.
Right.
North Korea is not going to respond to anything else. They're going to respond only to China. North Korea could, in a sense, die within a week if the world decided to let it die. All we had to do was, because they don't produce anything they need to survive. So we could simply blockade them and they would die.
But why would they do that? Why would China do that?
They don't want to do that because they don't want a unified Korea right on their border.
That's right.
They also don't want a refugee outflow.
Right. Across that river would be.
Yeah, but
I think
North
the Rio
Korea
Grande
is actually
is an issue?
More stable. I mean, they're basically agricultural and they're terribly poor. And so
terribly poor.
Yeah.
Their technology is the latest of the 1950s. And
the problem we have, I think, is that you get the sense that there's concerns about North Korea and its nuclear weapons and its ballistic missiles that there's information we don't have. Because, people like Mattis and Tillerson and McMaster aren't guys who are likely to be panicky, yet his senior people seem to be very concerned that this is something that needs to be resolved on a rapid basis, and that's why he was speaking to the Chinese and spent so much time talking about Korea when the meeting was originally going to be focused on trade. So I don't know why the sudden urgency, other than maybe the North Koreans are going to be able to put together a explosive and a ballistic missile that's going to be much more threatening than anything they've had in the past.
Would you also acknowledge that North Korea and discussions of the role of China as a checkmate against North Korea, that it really has taken Russia and the relationship with Vladimir Putin off the table, and also it's one of those areas where Democrats are not really pushing opposition to what the president is doing.
I get the feeling
that there wasn't even a lot of opposition to the dropping of the mother of all bombs, which I thought was going to be a huge thing. The Democrats were relatively silent.
The Democrats can't cheer for the not bombing terrorists. I mean, they're not going to they're not going to do that. But there's always a pacifist wing, but there is even on the Republican side. There were a lot of people who are Trump supporters who were mad that they wanted us to pull everybody out of all these foreign conflicts and just come home. So you've got this sort of pacifist come home wing in both parties. But with regard to Korea, Trump may be doing by turning up the heat and seeming to increase the military threat, he's leaning hard on the Chinese because the Chinese don't want a war to break out right next door to them. And he's basically telling them, if we have to do this, you're going to have a horrible mess on your hands, so why don't you escalate your involvement and turn up, speed up your timetable to clean
Japan's
this up.
Japan's another player there because they could become nuclear in no time.
The strategy now is to shift from the six-party talks to one-party talks. It used to be Russia, Japan, China, South, North, and us. Now it's just going to be us and North Korea. Mm. And we're signaling to China, you need to step out of the way because we're going to have to deal with this. Now, there's a lot of solutions that are not necessarily kinetic that we can bring to bear. The security forces on our side are totally prepared. We have every asset you could use, but that's not the ideal solution. Why? Because 6 million people in Seoul will die with 13,000 artillery pieces launching. And that's assuming it's just regular ordnance, let alone VX gas or some other chemical warfare.
The The question was asked today to Rance Priebus, and I was surprised that it was asked because it's been asked several weeks for the last several weeks on this program, and that is, would it be wise for President Trump to speak to the leader of North Korea?
He will.
Sure.
He will. Why not?
Does everybody agree? Why not?
I don't know.
This is a Republican saying, why not? Well,
so we know.
Well, but the point is, if whatever it takes to get this thing resolved, I mean, and if what it takes to get this resolved is the North Korea to say change the way they do things internally and have a perestroika in North Korea, for example, and if that means that the government has to, you know, he has to resign and we need to work out some deal with him, we have to talk to him.
Mike Miller.
Even you go back to Reagan and everybody since then, you never talk to major adversaries until you have something in hand. You let the people below you take care of it. So if they're doing something below the radar where they're trying to talk to North Korea to try and get something done, that's fine. But the President of the United States should not be on the phone with that particular man.
I mean, agree with that?
I'm not going to touch this one. I don't. Okay.
The President shouldn't, but I believe he will. Because it's his style to be the star. And he will say, I can get this done. I can make this deal happen. That's his whole brand. Now, he will send people ahead of time. Mattis has been around for a while. He knows what to say. Everybody around the president is going to give him the opportunity to be the star. And if he can fix this, he wins.
Is this the issue? When I say the North Korean issue as it relates to China, is this the issue that is most likely for Democrats they're going to have to swallow hard because there's no rational way for them to oppose what he's doing right now?
We're all patriots. We love our country.
Well, but there's a lot of people that don't agree that. There's a lot of people that don't believe that all Democrats are patriots. There's a lot of people that don't believe that.
Jeez.
I don't know who would say that.
Well,
but keep in mind that before
a lot of people at that rally last night would have said that.
You know, I'll
before
say this.
Trump was Hillary and Obama, and of course they're the experts. We were told, and look what they did with it. Now they're launching missiles all the time. That didn't just happen since the last 100 days. They've been developing that missile technology for a long time, and we have sat back and done absolutely nothing.
But I just wonder, like, what can we offer? Like, you could imagine
food and energy.
No, but but that would imply that the government cares about the people. But if they don't, if they care just about power, they've got what they want.
They don't care about their own people.
And anything we offer them is just giving them more spotlight.
And you can never trust a communist. I'm sorry.
We can start by saying that he's not crazy. He's a rational actor that has a different value proposition than we have. And first of all, take off the table.
That's a nice way of putting
it. He's crazy, right?
He's a monster.
Well, I'm not saying he's stupid. But he's a rational beast.
He may be rational, but he's a monster.
So if he's a rational beast, there'll be a self-interest that we can appeal to. Mm-hmm. And their number one self-interest is in increasing their safety. The whole reason that they're a nuclear power or aspiring to is because that's how they feel. That's their, for lack of a better word, trump card. And
it's 1949.
And that's the only thing they have to offer, right? They are exporting fear because that's all they have to peddle.
Right.
And so now if you just say, you know what, there's nothing for you to be afraid of. Mm-hmm. We are going to help you significantly. I'm not saying the Sunshine Policy that failed.
Well, if you do that, what you need to do is you need to get the Chinese involved and come up with some way to let these guys climb down to something else. So I use perestroika as an example, right? The Chinese didn't want glasnost. They want to just reform the economy, create crony capitalism when they stay in charge. You got to give the North Koreans some path to a less confrontational arrangement that still satisfies the Chinese that they've got a border buffer country. And maybe by turning the military threat up, you have a carrot in one hand and a stick in the other, and the carrot looks better.
But I think you made a point a couple of minutes ago, which I think is very, very important to underscore, and that is North Korea and South Korea, the Chinese do not want a unified Korea.
We've both said that.
And there's a lot of people who live in North or South Korea that don't want a unified Korea either.
But the Chinese also don't want an aircraft carrier that has a range of 600 nautical miles, which is well into China, to be off the coast of Korea.
Oh, why would they care? Like, they don't think we're going to attack them.
They don't, but
plus we've got nuclear missiles.
Well, the reason we're not going to...
And we also have submarines where they don't even know where they are.
The destabilized North Korea that causes a refugee crisis to overrun their borders, and now they've got 1 billion-plus people, plus their own people, that they've got to deal with.
Well, they could use some women anyhow.
All right. The Chinese are rational as well.
1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we'll take some calls. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont from coast to coast and border to border and around the world on BeyondTheBeltway.com every Sunday night.
Hey everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while one in five children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back. Let's go to calls right now. Let's go to Spokane, Washington. Mike is listening to us, a regular listener on KXLY. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air.
Well, thank you, Bruce. Thank you very much. Say, we know President Trump understands grassroots. I didn't vote for Hillary, by the way, but we know Trump understands grassroots politics, the factory worker, the person on the streets. He has put North Korea and China on notice, both economic and military options. China has been, you know, saying one thing and doing another for since 1950. We have to make sure we can verify by some means, way anything North Korea and China do. And on domestic programs, the Meals on Wheels program for the poor needs to be maintained. For some, that's the only meal they get. And also, Trump needs to listen to his political advisors like Newt Gingrich, those who have been there and done it. He can't do this alone.
Well, where do you think he's not listening to Newt?
Well, I'm not sure he's not. I really, you know, don't know. I hope he is because, you know, Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the House, has political knowledge, excellent political knowledge. And I hope he is listening to him. If he is, that's great.
One area where the president has, during the campaign, he got a lot of publicity on it and riled a lot of people up and also got a lot of people interested in him. And that was his comments about crime in America, specifically focusing on the violence in Chicago, and said that, you know, this is another thing he was going to do in his first 100 days. He was going to stop all crime in Chicago. And we have an attorney general now who's focusing on sanctuary cities. The federal judge also has said that not so fast on sanctuary cities. So it seems to me this is another area where the president has been stymied. Since Donald Trump has got elected, several hundred people have been murdered in the city of Chicago, not unlike the number of people that were murdered when Barack Obama was president of the United States, who did little to bring focus to it. Donald Trump is the one that brought most of the focus to the crime wave in Chicago. And yet we're 100 days in. He hasn't done anything in Chicago.
He doesn't know anything about infrastructure, public safety. The things that we need are not, you cannot arrest your way to public safety. I'm a Democrat, all right, so I'm law and order guy, but I believe that you do that by incentives. You give people a better alternative to selling the drug or to holding that corner.
What about rounding up gang leaders who are here illegally? Do you support that?
You know, what's funny is he gave a speech and he brought victims of illegal immigrants.
Yes, sure.
But if you look at the actual numbers, immigrants, illegal or not, all crimes at a lower rate. They don't actually have a higher risk.
But let's not get into a discussion of those statistics.
Okay.
Let's talk about the specific thing. If you are illegal, if you're here illegally, okay, and you commit a crime, in your opinion, should those people be deported?
I think anyone who commits a crime should face justice. Anyone. Now, where the argument that I find is lacking is what's really going to enhance public safety? And I don't think that it's
going after and identifying members of crime, of gangs, finding out who they are, going in, rounding them up, and getting them out
of
the country.
We actually spend more money on enforcement of the border than all the other federal law enforcement agencies combined. DEA, FBI, all of them get less funding combined than what we give to our border security. So maybe we should send some of that resources to those people doing the hard work at the ATF, the DEA. That would help.
Because those people that are involved in that, we're talking about the border security. Border security is one thing. I'm talking about the security in the city of Chicago or other municipalities, Los Angeles, major media centers and population centers in the United States, where there are members of gangs from Central America, some from Mexico, and they are engaged in criminal activity in the United States, and they're illegal. Why is there not a massive assault, a raid on getting those people, identifying who they are, and get them out of the country? And all the demonstrators, all the demonstrators that usually are a block from Trump Tower, which is we're a block from Trump Tower when we do this program. Uh-huh. All those people, many of whom are Hispanic, who think that Donald Trump is the world's worst human being, why are they not outraged that people from other parts of the world, Mexico, their own, maybe some of their own countries, they are here and they're engaged in criminal activity, and they are illegal and they're committing illegal activity?
Respect.
Why is there anyone, any Hispanic or anyone, that stands up and says, you know what, that's okay?
I'll tell you. You walk with me down 26th Street, Pilsen, Back of the Yards, Humble Park, Logan Square, you will find 99.999% of the people there are hardworking, tax-paying people.
Totally agree.
And so when you paint a broad brush on all Hispanics...
I didn't. What I would say is the brush that I would paint is the one that you just painted. Okay. 99% of the Hispanics, certainly, I'm going to just say, of those that I know, that I engage with, they are hardworking. They are religious.
Sure.
They're law abiding. They want to make life better for their family. What I'm just saying is, let's not ignore the fact that there are people that have come from Mexico and Central America. They are criminals. They are criminals. They come here illegally and they do illegal activities. They're involved in drug trafficking, all kinds of illegal activities.
They're bad hombres. We get it. But who specifically is saying
give
these guys a break? Who specifically is saying these criminals should get a break? Nobody.
I
disagree. When you stand up and you say that sanctuary cities should continue to get money for failing to enforce the law, you're basically saying, hey, you're turning the other cheek. This is where there's a difference between a Republican thinking and Democratic thinking. Democratic thinkers, generally speaking, that anyone in their base, there's no criminals in their base.
What the Constitution says is that there's a separation of powers, and the federal government shouldn't be telling local people how to spend their local resources. That's what the Constitution says. It doesn't say, give me...
Did you say the same thing when Mr. Obama was going to withhold money to states based upon their transgender policy?
Well, I'm personally a states' rights
guy. Did you do the same thing when we had a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit? Did you say the government has no right to withhold highway funds just because you're not going to do it 55 in Wyoming or Montana where you need
those
to go
85? Those are the 85. Questions.
I'm
We've got
this.
To pause. Back shortly. Don't go away. We're not done.
Is just a really, really, really good guy. The term good egg isn't enough to describe him. He's also certified organic and free range. Rich puts the cap back on everything. The toothpaste, the olive oil, the shampoo, everything. He lets his 10-year-old nephew beat him at virtual tennis, even though he can straight up slay his 10-year-old nephew in virtual tennis. When the toilet paper is running low, Rich replaces the roll on the actual holder, not just on the back of the toilet. Rich is texting and driving. Rich? No. What are you doing, Rich? I was just telling everyone how great you are. Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Hey, everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while one in five children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. We continue on Beyond the Beltway. Thank you for joining us from coast to coast and border to border. Let's go to William. He's listening to us in Chattanooga, Tennessee, on WNOX. Go ahead, Tennessee.
Yes. I had a question that's, I guess, kind of a statement. One of the guests had mentioned that, if I understood the statement, what the way we really need to be dealing with North Korea is to not be so aggressively defensive towards them, for lack of a better term, but that we should be offering them, we should appeal to the leader's self-interest by doing things like, for example, offering food and fuel. If I understand that correctly, does the guest really believe that the leader of North Korea is wringing his hands out of worry because thinking that the world is starving his country out, so he really needs to build up his military? Because, boy, if the world wants to starve him out like that, then he really better have a strong military. Does he really believe that's why that dictator is doing what he's doing?
Let's let Roberto respond, because I think he was the one that's referenced your question.
Hey, William, thanks for the question. So I think North Korea is basically the size of Indiana, and it's scary when you're that small. And if you've got a million plus people in infantry and they don't have boots, all of them, and you spend 25% of your GDP on that, you might be a little nervous. Now, in my opinion, we would bring them into our sphere of influence by saying, well, you get all your fuel and all of your food from China. You're dependent on them. Let's make you more powerful. Let's give you another alternative so you're not totally dependent on them. I think if the leader of North Korea were to have other diversified streams of income and know that we're not a threat, then it might benefit him. Now, you might argue that he needs us to scare his people to maintain his power, and he doesn't care if they're trying to escape to China. But
what is the probability that if we gave them oil and we gave them food, that it would get to the people? I think the probability is near zero. It would get to the military in both cases. The army would be fed, and the army would be have all the fuel they need to keep their tanks going into South Korea. But would the people have light at night? Would the people have more than just grass and whatever else they can find to eat? No, I don't believe for a second. A lot of places in Africa, we don't give them money directly because we know that they're kleptocrats. They're going to steal everything we give them.
Let me ask you this, William. We talked about this briefly the last couple of weeks, but I want to get your comments. Do you think at this moment in the country, the United States, we may be overreacting to the rhetoric of a guy who we, as the United States, deemed a total whack job? That we're reacting to words, not really actions. Although there have been the military tests, are we overreacting to his words?
Given his past behavior and what he's willing to do, I would say, even given that, I would say yes, it's an overreaction to park an aircraft carrier off his coast if he didn't have nuclear weapons and if he didn't have arguably capable ICBMs. If those weren't the case, I would say yes, it's overreacting.
What would you say to this question? He has publicly said that he's going to sink the Carl Vinson. Now, we had guests on this program last week that said it's highly unlikely that you would be able to sink an aircraft carrier. That's number one. Since we're the greatest military power on Earth, I would assume that the aircraft carrier and everyone in that group has all kinds of missiles to shoot down incoming missiles. So the likelihood of North Korea or maybe even any nation being able to sink that aircraft carrier is probably slim and none. And yet, he's gone on the public stage with his own people and around the world, and he has said, we're going to sink the Carl Vinson. What happens if he doesn't sink the Carl Vinson? How should people react to the next threat that he makes?
Well, him saying that he's going to sink it is simply a idle threat, because the Navy knows the capabilities of over the horizon. They already take steps to stay.
I agree with that. But here's my next point. 3 weeks ago or 3 months ago, he said they're developing missiles because they want to hit the western part of the United States. So are we overreacting to that? When he says that he can reach Seoul, I think everyone around this table agrees he can reach Seoul. He can reach Seoul with conventional weapons, not alone. He doesn't have to even use nuclear weapons. Now, he can do that, but he hasn't done it, or the North Korean government, they haven't done it for 50 years.
Well, he hasn't demonstrated his ability to have an over-the-horizon carrier killer missile.
No,
but
he hasn't.
But he has demonstrated his ability to have ICBMs. It doesn't even require an ICBM to reach one of our allies, and that he's nuclear capable. He's already demonstrated that.
Roberto's got a comment for you, William.
So the THAAD system's been tested 13 times since 2006, and we have 100% capability. Now, he only has to get lucky one time. So he has tested us. And what's interesting about the dynamic is that he's actually upped the tempo. It used to be one at a time, two at a time. Now it's three or four at a time. It's like the game of Missile Command. It gets hard to stop them all at the same time. And that's his strategy, just to put up the pressure and then negotiate, hey, I'll slow down, give me more of what I want. My opinion is we can get to what he wants as a win-win without pulling out the nuclear option. Because if he goes to that option, the Nudong intercontinental ballistic missile can get to California. Now, the real question with that, though, is they can't actually miniaturize right now the warhead to get the payload on there. But eventually
the
they will be.
Like too? What's the reentry? Well,
Just
because it goes up doesn't mean it's going to come down.
Go ahead, William. Back to you.
Well, that's why something needs to be done now or sooner than later. Because once he gets to that point, based on his past track record, we know the likelihood of his using that.
I think he's just trolling us.
Yeah, sure.
And it's yeah. just it's for domestic consumption. It's to, you know, be the big man in front of his people.
What's that? We have given him his bath. Type 1 and a type 2 error.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
What if you happen to be wrong and you think they're not and they, in fact, are going to use it? And of course, the outcome is just horrendous. So,
well, in this particular case, though, and this was part of our discussion last week, even if he presses a button and attempts to fire on the Carl Vinson,
it doesn't work. It doesn't work for lots of reasons. We have multi-layered defensive system. We have permanently geosynchronous satellites.
I understand. Let's say you shoot down everything. But the fact that he tried to do it.
That's act of war.
That is an act of war.
Then
we have to respond. But again, when we come back, we're going to find out how do we respond, because there is no clear way in which we can respond. 1-800-723. Thanks for Chattanooga. Your call tonight.
We're going to go.
1-800-723-8229. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school. Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Back in Chicago, once upon a time, you will all recall, because we're all watching television, President George W. Bush talked about the axis of evil, Iran, Iraq, and North Korea. Now, Iran wants nuclear power. We invaded Iraq, and here we got North Korea. So I guess my question is, when you determine that a nation is an is part of the axis of evil, and you see the way the United States reacts to two of the other countries that were in that axis of evil, does it make you want to continue your nuclear program? Because the reality is, if you have nuclear weapons, the United States treats you differently than if you don't have nuclear weapons.
That's pretty clear that that's the case.
Okay, so then was it a mistake for President Bush to use that term in his speech to Congress?
He shouldn't have signaled to our enemies what we're going to. I don't think he should have said it. What utility was there to that? You just put them on higher alert. You should do these things one at a time. You should have your policy to each one tailored to that country. Unless you're going to do something right away, we're going to be going to Iraq like he wanted to do. It's going to be a huge commitment. He's not going to be able to do anything.
Mike Miller, are we asking for it?
No, I don't think we're asking for it. I think that George Bush is, at least in terms of Iran and North Korea, are spot on. I think that Iran, if they could get their hands on nukes, would use them in a moment in terms of against Israel. And I think they'd want that partly because of a religious fervor, not just a hatred of the Jews. And I wonder if North Korea keeps telling us to our face, we're going to do X, Y, Z. Of course, Hitler and others have done. We're going to do X, Y, Z. And they did, and we were surprised. They are an evil. Just during the break, I asked, how could a human being be as evil as the Kims are, as this particular Kim is, that everything he is doing is impoverishing his people beyond anyone, almost anyone else on this planet, and he doesn't care. So it seems to me that
But he's not unique.
I mean, he's not unique.
There are people that we would not describe as necessarily diabolical. And you know what? Some of them may be listening to the program this evening. And you know what? They care about themselves.
Yeah.
I don't care if there's another human being who has no food within, you know, a mile of where I live. I don't care about them. I care about myself. I don't know whether that's that much different than this attitude that you're describing with Kim.
But you see, to me, the big difference that makes both Iran and North Korea evil is my belief that push came to shove. They would use these arms in first strike, not first use, first strike. And
why?
They would,
let me ask why.
With Iran, it would have to do with destroy.
Let's focus on North Korea. I guess my question would be, why, after 50 years, there's never been an armistice signed between North and South Korea in the Korean conflict, why now would North Korea want to use its power to perhaps destroy South Korea, fellow Koreans?
I don't know how to get into the mind of such an evil person. Just think of how many Koreans he would kill. And these would be people who speak the same language from the same culture that goes back thousands of years. I don't think he would have a second thought in trying in destroying enormous numbers of Koreans.
It'd be like us going to war with England.
No.
Well, I guess we did that a couple times.
We did that a couple times, but back then, and we didn't. And, of course, war was different when we went to war with England. I mean, it's just a bunch of guys lining up shooting each other.
If his goal is not to vanquish South Korea or invade South Korea, because he could have done it if he wanted to do it even conventionally, hasn't done it for 50 years, and the family has not done it for 50 years, then it seems to me that the only reason why he has the nuclear weapons or wants to have the nuclear weapons is, again, to rattle his sabers to get in the face of the United States, because he knows that every American policymaker knows, you know what, this guy may not be able to get Los Angeles, but you know what, he can get Seoul.
In Tokyo.
Yeah.
And the Philippines. So, I mean, he's in a very good position for him.
But, see, I guess I don't understand why he doesn't understand. He's already in that position. He already has nukes. And he also has nukes that can hit nearby him.
He's already powerful.
He's already so far beyond what he should be in terms of importance in this world. This is a country that is probably economically smaller than Vermont. I have to look at the numbers. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. I feel terrible for the 25 million people that are under the rule of this country. But why is this country, of all the countries in the world, receiving this much attention from us?
Because it has a leader who says outrageous things, and the world reacts to it. You know what? And some would say that our president, during the campaign, did the same thing.
Oh,
we have people around the world who are fearful of the rhetoric of our president, just like there's a lot of people that are fearful of the rhetoric of the North Korean president.
To push back, I'm not fearful of his rhetoric. I actually find it humorous, the things that he says, the exaggeration from both sides,
Trump.
By the way. Mr. Trump, too.
Okay.
No, I agree. I said there's no filter between his brain and his mouth. But the thing that fears the fear is that they're going to develop miniaturized nukes that can go on to ICBMs that can hit us. I don't care that England has these and France has them and China has them and Russia has them because they're not going to use them. They're not the fools that Iran and North Korea both are.
Why would North Korea want to launch a nuclear attack against the United States?
Because they told us so. Maybe it's all blessed.
Nikita Khrushchev said he was going to bury us.
They want to have the capability because they know how weak they are. We've heard that their army doesn't even have boots for all their soldiers. Nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles are a comparatively cheap way to have a defense for your country.
And we also negotiate with countries that have nuclear weapons.
We're supposedly allies with Pakistan, which funds terrorism against our own guys
and
in Afghanistan.
And gave them a lot of their
And
stuff.
They have nuclear
weapons.
But
Korea is different. Korea does sarin gas attacks. They have VX gas. 72 kids choked on something very similar, and we went after them with the biggest bomb that's ever been made.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we start seeing Seoul, and suddenly there's unexplained sudden headaches, difficulty seeing, these are the signs and symptoms of a mild nerve agent. If they can't breathe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Excessive drooling of the mouth, muscular twitching of the exposed skin, all these things, if any of that happens,
mm-hmm.
or if they try to attack an aircraft carrier, all bets are off.
Let's assume for a moment the Kim regime is composed of evil people, but they want to stay in power. If they start a war, they will lose, and they will lose power. Now, their capability to defend their own country against everyone around them is diminishing. They're getting poorer. Their country's not developing. Their military isn't what it once was.
No.
It's decaying.
Yep.
The Chinese are tired of them and don't want to give them the help they used to. They're trying to acquire these things as a way to defend themselves. And our concern is because they're erratic and we can't rely on them to act like rational actors we can have a SALT II treaty with, we're afraid of them being able to reach us. Hopefully, we'll be able to come up with a way to give them some assurance and get them on a path where they're not going to be the way they are now, but they're not going to acquire nuclear weapons as well.
We are reacting to a person that we've described as a crazy despot, and I don't think he's crazy. We've been discussing that the last couple of weeks. He's crazy like a fox because he has the power, and he's still leading that country when the country is a basket case. A reality is that the world is reacting, or at least the United States is reacting, to the rhetoric of a guy who just likes to run his mouth.
You got a child with a gun, and you have to deal with that child because that child's got a gun. But that child is not a threat today, but because of the escalation, the new Nodong missiles growing to 10,000 kilometers range, we have to take it more seriously, which is why I'm okay with us flying the flag over there. That's why I'm okay with us. We just invested $10.7 billion in building a new army base in South Korea. That's okay with me because that's going to stabilize the region going forward, and it's also very helpful to deal with Korea. We also have ridiculous amounts of power. There's nothing he can do to win the war. All he can do, the horror, is slaughter 6 or 7 million innocent lives. That's why we should take it seriously.
Yeah. And I just wonder what we're seeing here.
By the way, he and his family could have done that for the last 50 years.
Right.
The idea of North Korea with a preemptive strike against South Korea, I think, is not likely to happen ever.
We would cyber jam
Japan, maybe. Japan, maybe, but not. I don't believe that they would launch against South Korea. I think
Japan is surrounded by Aegis missile systems on ships.
I mean, I think he's got mad in his pocket that the damage he can do to South Korea is enough that
it scares us.
Yeah, and it's a very credible defense. I think he's just doing this for a glamour project, personal aggrandizement.
Let's assume that's right, and I this is beyond my pay grade. Then maybe we should just leave him alone and let him develop ICBMs that are miniaturized and well-targeted, because he'll not use it, even though he says he would be more than that.
Then he might shoot it off to show he was serious.
But then that undermines everything you said.
But don't we, with
all the money that we have, we have defensive mechanisms that would shoot down anything that he tried?
I would hope so.
Absolutely.
But, of course, the Democrats fought us all that time when Mr. Reagan tried to come up with it. They said, this is evil.
You can't always count on your defensive measures working. And if one gets through and one of your major cities gets blown up, it's a huge problem. Also, we have had a policy of trying to be against nuclear proliferation, which hasn't always succeeded. Pakistan is now a big problem. I always wonder why no one talks about Pakistan. But that is an aside. Israel has them. We're not too worried about Israel. But some countries actually were developing programs and we talked them out of it. Argentina stopped. South Africa actually had, I think, a bomb that worked and they dismantled it because we talked them into it. So the basic idea of having fewer countries have these things, especially where we have not a monopoly but a very predominant position, is a good policy. But North Korea, because of the difficult nature of that regime, it's tough to make deals with them.
And they can sell the technology. They can proliferate it for profit.
They have done that.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And they know that a nation with nuclear weapons is treated differently by the United States. 1-800-723-8289. We will continue our discussion, move into some other areas when we roll on from Chicago.
What I was going to say is, yes, we should.
Mother's Day is coming up on Sunday, May 14th. Do you have something special for your mom this year? How about an experience that she'll never forget, and one you and your entire family can enjoy watching for years to come? It's an opportunity for your mom to be interviewed by Larry King down at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in downtown Chicago. It's an opportunity for her to share her childhood, her life's memorable moments, the moments that frequently are shared over holiday dinners. The Larry King Fantasy Interview Experience is a recorded memory for a lifetime. Her interview with the legendary Larry King, recorded, then edited together, for all to see and share with the family around the world. The questions are simple, nothing to study for, but an opportunity for your mom to share her life with Larry King. Go to museum.tv for further details. Look for Larry King's picture. That's museum.tv. A great gift for only $24.95. Thank you, Bruce Dumont, back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. And, folks, we're back on the air.
I'll take that.
Okay. We're back on the air, folks. A question to you. I'm going to ask you, Mark, this question. When will we know whether Donald Trump is a successful president in delivering promises of more jobs, higher quality jobs, and that those who are blue-collar American workers will feel that their vote for Donald Trump was justified? How will we measure that?
Well, to some extent, it's asking too much of a president that, you know, they run government, but that doesn't necessarily run the economy. There's a lot of, you know, endogenous factors there. But I think we just have to wait for the data to come in, and hopefully 2 years out we'll, you know, get some feel like something he's done is working.
What data will we see that?
I think employment data would be a good thing, and looking at wage data.
That's the key. I think a lot of Americans, myself included, when I look at my base salary, I've mentioned this on the air before, I adjusted for inflation. I'm paid what I was paid in 2010. Mm-hmm. I've not moved since 2010. I have a wonderful job and I'm paid handsomely. I'm not complaining. But many, many Americans feel that they work harder and harder and they get no further. And I think the key that he promised, that people bought into, and this is what I was holding to as well, even though I didn't vote for him, is that if real wages are rising, by the time he comes up for reelection, he will be reelected without a problem. If real wages remain stagnant, employment remains stagnant, people feel they can't get ahead, that when they do get ahead, they're taxed to a point that it's not worth it, then he will be a one-term president.
But also, as a campaign ensues, obviously there will be a set of statistics that will come out, and mm-hmm. you know, you're right of center, you're left of center. I mean, you will interpret those statistics differently than maybe Mark might interpret those. In other words, not everybody's.
There are things that people can agree on. Trump has said some rather embarrassing things.
And I don't mean that. If you're not comfortable being left of center, I think we're both pretty center.
But Trump has said very embarrassing things about the unemployment rate. Yes. And about how it's computed. And it,
right.
He doesn't said know the about, U3 but, from the U6.
But, he said things,
but it, to defend the guy, that we do have a very low employment to population ratio.
Yes, it is.
And
yes.
That there's clearly some push to be given there. And so this notion that, you know, that we're at the limit for what we can do. That's, you can make that case. Look at the unemployment rate. You look at the employment population rate, or the prime age employment rate, and there's a lot of growth that could come there.
That's
and so
right.
If you know, we can't really see improvement on the unemployment rate. That's pretty much at rock bottom. But if we see the employment to population rate come up, you know that would be.
Any, it's true of any president that pretty much that if you have a booming economy, you're going to get reelected, right?
Except so the for question, Barack Obama.
Well,
he was the one exception. He was reelected in spite of the fact that nothing was
going on. But I didn't say it's the only way to do it.
I agree with that.
Look, we talked about headwinds earlier. You get a pushing wind. If you have a booming economy. Now, if Trump has the benefit of a booming economy, he will do like every politician has ever done and claim credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of the things he's doing seem to be pro-growth type policies, tax simplification, reducing rates on businesses.
But he hasn't done them.
Well, he wants to.
And it's costing $1 trillion in the deficit.
He wants to do them. He's pushing them. And he has a Republican Congress that at least is ideologically aligned with that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So when you get... You get 4 years to see if this comes in and you get it anywhere. So your question was, what will we see? If I think the key distinction is right. The measured unemployment rate is historically not bad, but the percentage of the working age workforce that's working is historically out of step and seems to be low. Getting people back, making them feel they have confidence that they can get jobs, support their families, means we need to get that number up. So that's the number to look for.
But
Bruce's question was, what should we be looking for?
Yeah.
That I think is the number. If we must pick one, that's the number to pick.
Right. Income would be part of it. That the incomes are rising in real terms, that people feel that they're properly rewarded for taking risk, that entrepreneurs can take risk and are properly rewarded. I think there's one other aspect which I think he has begun to walk back. He attacked Janet Yellen, which was a silly thing to do. Janet Yellen is a very competent economist who's doing a very, very difficult job. As long as he doesn't screw up the reappointment.
She's the head of the Fed.
She's the head of the Fed. That also will be a positive, that he will appoint somebody who's sensible. The Fed has the power to really screw things up if you put it in the hands of incompetent people. We know that from the past when incompetent people have been the head of the Fed. So he needs to make sure that he is very careful in his appointments to the Fed.
What role will the stock market play in deciding whether or not he has been a successful president or not? Mm.
The market's not the economy.
No, but it is a representation of your wealth.
But what's more important than that is, what is the dual mandate that's being met? And is he not? And is he leaving them alone so they can do their dual mandate, right? The unemployment number and the inflation.
Yeah.
It seems to me that, by all accounts, Janet Yellen's doing a great job, but she's vulnerable politically because of the reappointment. If she leaves, I'm concerned that the economy will overheat personally. And I'm worried then about inflation. I'm worried about homeowners paying 5% for the 30-year mortgage.
I wish it would overheat. Yeah. I would like to see that.
No, right.
The one thing is, historically, it's always been that the Democrats are the ones who are accused of erring on the side of allowing inflation to rise so that unemployment stays low. Mm-hmm. Republicans are usually said, we don't care about
at the normal rate of unemployment now.
Although Arthur Burns, one
at a time. Roberto, go ahead.
Okay. We've achieved Nehru. We all have an economics degree at the table, so we're being nerdy here. But the unemployment rate is it's not going to improve, right?
But again, nonetheless, for whatever reason, we have a structural, very low percentage historically of our working age people who are actually working or working full time or working at the rate they'd
are
like.
Are we measuring
to be.
That correctly though? With
look,
the gig economy,
I think we are, and so that's the concern. Why is that happening, and what do we need to do to improve that?
I have a young man,
gentlemen. I have another measurement issue, and that is. The president running for office talked about, you know, NAFTA. NAFTA has been part of the political discussion for over 20 years in this country now. During the campaign, he said he was going to scrap it. This past week, said he's going to renegotiate with Mexico and with Canada. How will we know whether or not a renegotiated NAFTA will be a positive for the blue-collar workers in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin, the core states he's going to need to run re-election? Mark Witte.
Well, I just don't think it's really going to matter for that. I mean, the big problem is technological change.
Yes.
Right. And we can point to immigrants all we want,
it's the
damn robots.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The biggest
and the limit on trade.
Does everybody agree with that?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. So the thing.
So
that
the
has
coal jobs are not coming back to West Virginia.
No. Because they're going to be replaced.
Well, coal's going to come back because it's maybe going to go to China. And I am happy, for example, with his view on Keystone and with fracking. And by the way, we just found out fracking this week. Duke University study does nothing to groundwater. Does not affect groundwater at all. He's on the right side of cheap energy.
We're going to be energy neutral. We're moving towards that.
That's correct. But you are correct that NAFTA it's going to be automation.
I want to answer your question, though, because the way that we'll know that he's successful is when the farmer in Nebraska isn't getting beat up with a tax at the border because he can export his grain. Mexico's going to buy from Brazil. And we're going to lose out if they put that border tax.
The employment problem is a technological problem. We all agree on that. And the only way that that's going to be solved is if you have a entrepreneurial economy where there's a lot of innovation happening and a lot of new kinds of jobs are being created, which means you need to reduce the regulatory burden, reduce the tax burden, and permit entrepreneurs to take risk and make money. And Trump, fortunately, at least that's the policy thrust. No, he doesn't have a detailed plan, but that is also consistent generally with what the Republicans have wanted to do, so maybe we'll see some progress. Now, the interesting question, what about NAFTA? Look, he said at some point he said he was going to renegotiate. It's a terrible deal. What is this for? Is this people in upstate New York and Wisconsin see some benefit on the dairy sector? This is a political play. It's not something that's going to make a material difference in the economy. He's not going to tear up NAFTA because it would be a disaster. No, he's going to renegotiate and declare victory.
How is he going to explain? Because he's used NAFTA as a political tool.
Right.
He's now going to use it as a political tool again. I am sure that virtually every decision he makes could be viewed as an overlay. You'll look at Pennsylvania, you'll look at Michigan, you'll look at Wisconsin, maybe Minnesota. You'll look at those states, and you know what? That's where he's going to get reelected in those states, and he's only going to get reelected, in my view, if the blue-collar Democrats that went his way and Republicans, mostly Democrats, though, if those blue-collar Democrats believe all the statistics that are going to be coming out
Here's the kind of thing
they do care about their jobs. Although, as you say, you talked about security is another issue.
That's the issue.
Look, they're not going to listen to stats. They're going to care about whether or not they have jobs.
They're going to care about anecdotes. Right. Look, people. Right. Look,
economy.
So in other words, if he saves Carrier again, or some other big
Carrier.
It's a mirage. It's a mirage, but people believe it.
Sure.
If I do something that's good for the whole economy, say by changing, maybe simplifying the tax code, and we end up with a wind at our back, and things look good, and he gets reelected.
Yes.
But to win in Pennsylvania, he needs to stand in front of a plant that he can somehow plausibly say is still here because I renegotiated NAFTA.
He can lie.
He needs the jobs to rise in Pennsylvania.
Right. Yeah. He needs both.
He
needs He needs to allow immigrants to boost our economy. They're consuming.
Well, he's going to do it. Well,
they don't vote so much, though.
Look.
But they stimulate the economy, and they're consumers. Mm.
He's talked about legal immigrants. You could expect him to do is at some point propose some reform to how we handle our legal process.
Gentlemen,
and declare victory.
Pause. Thank you all for being with us tonight.
Staple a visa to every guy that graduates.
Hey everybody, this is Josh Groban. After so many years on the stage, one of my favorite things about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. Every year, billions of pounds of excess food go to waste, while 1 in 5 children may be left not knowing where their next meal is coming from, or if it's even coming at all. Thankfully, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food and helps deliver it to kids in need across the country. But they can't do it alone. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont, we continue. This is our last segment of the broadcast this evening. Michael Otis, I want to talk about the issue of sanctuary cities and illegal immigration, because everything that Donald Trump has tried to do, there's been a federal judge that has blocked that or made it very, very difficult. And again, you're part of his base. Is fighting the good fight good enough? Or does he have to win on some of these issues? Most let's focus on sanctuary cities. Should that be a battle that he and the Attorney General take all the way to the Supreme Court?
Well, sure they should, because the president's ability to control spending, there's limits on what he can do, and if the court's wrong or is overreaching, they should challenge it and defeat that, because it's an important separation of powers issue. So sure, yeah, he should resist that. And I haven't read the opinion, the most recent one, but I understand that the judge is basically overreached. So also, local law enforcement has discretion on the degree to which they're going to assist the feds in enforcing the immigration laws. So there's some play in there, and I don't know what we could do in terms of legislation to make them do more, but if they're going to absolutely dig in and not do it, then the president, who just won on this issue, it was his premier issue, to the extent he has discretion and where money goes, he can exercise it.
Follow-up question to you. What if the federal courts continue to strike down all of the things that he said as it relates to illegal immigration and sanctuary cities? Mm-hmm. Are you worried that at the end, when it comes to re-election time, there will be a large number of current Trump voters that will be so frustrated, not that he didn't try to change things, but a reality is everything. Here's a guy that came and said exactly what I wanted. I really was supportive of this guy. And whether it is the Republican establishment, whether it is, you know, the media establishment, whether it is the federal courts, this guy was stymied in every single way. And they say, you know what, this country sucks. I don't believe that anybody can ever change it again, and I give up. Are you worried about that?
Oh, there's a lot of that's been going on anyway. I mean, a lot of people feel like it doesn't matter who you elect. It's the same lobbyists with
different.
The same
it
guys.
But it was different in 2016.
Well, there was some hope that he could do more, and it's still a little bit early, you know. I mean, he may – for one thing, we talked about this earlier. If he staffs his administration and has his people in the Department of Justice who can review these things
– just clone Jared Kushner.
Well, no, it's not a matter of cloning Jared Kushner. No, look, but let's – okay, let's be fair, though. If I'm
He's got another daughter.
If I'm Hillary
Clinton – there'll be another son-in-law coming the way.
Look, we can imagine a liberal Democrat rather than Trump coming in, who's more or less a novice, but who's the reformer, who's a populist. Mm-hmm. That guy doesn't have, whoever it is, you know, a list of people who they've always worked with, who they know and trust to staff these positions. I wish Trump were moving more quickly, but it's not a surprise that, unlike Jeb Bush or Hillary Clinton, he doesn't have two or three names for every slot when he came in.
But he doesn't have thousands, right? There's vacancies on vacancies on vacancies.
I wish he'd get moving faster.
Republican establishment.
Well, he doesn't want to just hand it to the same people he ran against.
But he went ahead and fired, decapitated the State Department, wants to cut their funding by 31%. I mean, he's really not trying to have the government work. He's trying to be like Reagan.
I don't agree with you. I don't think that's right. I think he wants it to work, but I don't think it's going to be easy to get Trump loyalists.
He doesn't want it to work
positions.
If he's going after.
As a political, I want to get everybody's reaction just to the political question.
Sure.
And that is this issue of believing that Donald Trump is going to be able to do something, and just after 3.5 years of being stymied everywhere, you know, either he's going to throw up his hands and say, "I give up," or his constituents are going to just say, "You know what? This guy was the great white hope. He tried for us. He didn't succeed. We're not mad at him. We're mad at the system, and we believe this system will never, ever be changed. It wasn't changed by a billionaire running for president of the United States."
There's a deep constituency, the part that's with him 98% right now, that may feel that way. But there's another, in my opinion, more dynamic constituency, because they're solid for him, that says, "Well, wait, you were a nationalist, and now you're a globalist, and now you're both? How can you be a globalist and a nationalist? You were against China, they were a currency manipulator, and now they're not?" Like, I think his own lack of consistency is what's going to do him in, if anything.
No. You look at the sanctuary cities thing, I just wonder if those who are fighting back to Mr. Trump are being very short-sighted in this sense. The Democrats, of course, used the nuclear option for all things except for the Supreme Court So what happened, of course, it was used against them to get Neil Gorsuch. And whoever the next one's going to be, it's probably going to be a replacement of a liberal with a conservative. And the 51 is going to rule the day. What will happen in, say, 4 years or 6 years when maybe a Democrat is in power and wants to impose some kind of action upon the states, and the states say, I don't think so.
Sure.
I think I'm not going to live up to this particular law.
Sure.
Which laws do I have to no, I don't think I'm going to.
Sure.
And if then we aren't a country anymore. We're just a whole bunch of different states. And there are certain things the country has to do. And one of them is to protect the borders, national defense, and so forth. And this is the one thing they're saying, nah, I don't think I'm going to bother. I don't. Could you imagine that being done?
Choose.
What would be the Democrats' reaction when this was done with regard to education, when Brown versus the Board of Education had to be enforced and the National Guard had to be brought in to make sure that
with
people
all deliberate
could go to
speed
school?
30 years later, we still had an issue, right?
It was still an issue, but they did the right thing, and we imposed the law upon the states because that's the law. I think that the Democrats
opinion,
are being
public
very
opinion
short-sighted
is
here.
Against the wall. Public opinion is against mass deportation.
This is about
sanctuary cities
where you can have a federal law. All we ask you to do is to hold a criminal until we get there and take him away because he or she is illegal. And you're going to say no because I have
criminal
no
or anyone who's detained. Those are two very different things.
A criminal.
Okay, a criminal is different. What sanctuary city policy says that you have to detain anyone, even if they're not found
they're,
guilty
if
of a crime.
Requested by
even if
ICE.
They're not found guilty of a crime.
But is it also, it is a
big
crime.
Big difference, though.
It is a crime to be here illegally,
it's
isn't it?
It's a crime to speed, but, you know.
It's a crime to be here illegally, isn't it?
You can commit a crime, which is
see, now
a
you're,
civil
now
offense.
Now you're deciding which
wait,
laws
can
you
can
live up to and which ones you can
is
ignore.
Is it against the law if they're here illegally?
Of
what do you think?
Of course it's against the law. You know, maybe you should be more careful as Democrats and Republicans in passing laws.
Section 8 of the USC,
a
federal
law,
is enforced by federal officers. You cannot deputize local officials.
Right.
We have separation of powers.
All we ask is
that we have separation of powers. We're co-equal branches.
I agree with that. I understand.
And it's tyranny to say you're going to do what I say because I'm in D.C.
No, I'm going to.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. Our thanks to all of our guests this evening. Our thanks to Fritz Goldman and Colin Bobbitt and Dan Dorfman and all the help that we get putting this program together. Until next week at this same time, I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.